our What's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Laurie London reporting. UK broadcasters are projecting that Britain has voted to leave the 28-nation European Union in a historic referendum as the pound tumbles to a 31-year low against the dollar following these results. The figures delivered a deep shock to financial markets, overturning earlier anticipation of a narrow victory for Remain. VOA's Luis Ramirez is in London.
The people I spoke to at the polling station said they have made their minds up for quite a while, despite what they said was really a great deal of confusion. Lots of facts and figures being thrown out by both sides. Many people didn't know quite what to believe. They'd made up, though, their mind long ago. There was a group of voters who were undecided until just a few hours before the referendum began. And while those people gave it some final thought, looked at the final arguments, and decided that they should vote because this is a historic election.
Well, if the win is confirmed, it will be the first time ever that a country has left the EU. They were hugging each other, some were crying. The large crowd of immigrants, advocates, and politicians gathered outside the U.S. Supreme Court Thursday after the justices' tie vote left in place a ruling that blocked President Barack Obama's plan to extend deportation protection to millions of undocumented immigrants.
Today also reminds me that we just have to keep fighting. Because so many millions of people, like my parents, are waiting for this.
The 4-4 decision, advocates say, produced tears and disappointment, but also will motivate people to vote in the upcoming presidential election. This is VOA News. A judge has found a police officer in Baltimore, a Baltimore police van driver not guilty of all charges in the death of 25-year-old Freddie Gray, whose broken neck in police custody set off Baltimore's worst riots in decades. Six officers were charged in Gray's death, but only Officer Caesar Goodson was accused of murder. Gray was fatally injured after officers bound his hands and feet, and Goodson left him unprotected by a seatbelt that prosecutors say would have kept him from slamming into the van's metal walls. House Democrats ended their 26-hour sit-in outside the U.S. Capitol Thursday singing the civil rights anthem, "We Shall Overcome," after an extraordinary protest for a vote on gun control legislation. Democrats say their efforts succeeded even though they didn't get the votes they were seeking. At a news conference afterward, they said their efforts had raised awareness around the world. And noting the families who lost loved ones in the mass shooting in Orlando, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi vowed to keep fighting.
We hope to give them some hope that their grief, and so many of them who are grieving, have turned their grief into action in order to get some guns laws passed so that other families are spared.
Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan said the sit-in was just a fundraising publicity stunt. UN Syrian envoy Stefan de Mistura says he hopes intra-Syrian talks can resume sometime next month. The last session broke down at the end of April as the then two-month-old cessation of hostilities began to unravel.
Don't forget, the cessation of hostilities took place when the Russian Federation and U.S. agreed on something, and that produced a critical mass. We are looking for the same type of critical mass on the beginning of the political transition.
The envoy has held two rounds of proximity talks in Geneva with delegations from the Syrian government and moderate opposition. The mayor of Argentina's capital said Thursday that the Buenos Aires Zoo will be turned into an ecological park. He says the zoo will gradually relocate most of its 1,500 animals to sanctuaries in Argentina and abroad because they're not living in adequate conditions. He said Argentina's following a global trend of turning zoos into parks and animal sanctuaries where animals can live in a natural habitat, not surrounded by noise and buildings. The Buenos Aires Zoo was inaugurated in 1875 in what used to be the outskirts of the capital, but is now a neighborhood near busy avenues and buildings. I'm Laurie London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, in for James Batty. Today is Friday, June 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda plans to withdraw troops from Somalia by the end of 2017. And the Council of Churches in Zambia has expressed disappointment that leaders of political parties have failed to ensure their supporters stop engaging in violence in the run-up to the August 11th general election.
We, as the Council of Churches in Zambia, are hugely worried, very concerned about the escalating violence in all forms.
That is Suzanne Matale, the General Secretary of the Council of Churches in Zambia. U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama will visit Liberia next week to highlight girls' education. Zimbabwe's deteriorating economic situation has given rise to protests around the country.
Let us fight with the last drop of our tears. Let us fight with the last drop of our sweat. Enough is enough. Swabwana, swabwaneli.
That's Zimbabwe's opposition deputy Thokozani Kupe addressing thousands of demonstrators in the city of Mutare. And Nigeria's government has launched a mass online recruitment drive to offer training and employment opportunities to young people. But the initiative has been marred by irregularities. Those stories, plus Mark Owuma's sports, are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. The Ugandan government says it plans to withdraw its troops from Somalia by December 2017. The Ugandan forces are part of the African Union AMISOM peacekeeping mission based in Somalia since 2007. Uganda's announcement signals a further scale back in its regional military interventions. Earlier this month, it notified the African Union of plans to withdraw all of its troops from a mission in Central African Republic to hand down members of the Lord's Resistance Army rebel group. Ugandan forces have intervened in several regional security hotspots, deploying troops to help quell unrest in Somalia, Central African Republic, and South Sudan in recent years. Of late, President Museveni has faced a wave of opposition at home since winning a disputed presidential election in February. Uganda deployed in Somalia in 2007 with a mandate to combat Al-Shabaab Islamist militants. The Council of Churches in Zambia has expressed disappointment that leaders of political parties have failed to ensure their supporters stop engaging in violence in the run-up to the August 11th general election. Leaders of political parties, including incumbent President Edgar Lungu of the ruling Patriotic Front, PF Party, and the main opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, recently met religious groups and signed a pledge promising to help end political related violence in their parties. But supporters of both parties continue to accuse each other of perpetrating violence across the country, including the capital, Lusaka. Reverend Suzanne Matale, General Secretary of the Council of Churches in Zambia, tells reporter Peter Cloti the spate of violence is disappointing, especially when the country is known in the Southern African region and in Africa as a peace-loving nation.
We, as the Council of Churches in Zambia, are hugely worried, very concerned about the escalating violence in all forms. And therefore, on our part as Council of Churches, together with other mother bodies, we call them here, we have actually tried to bring together political parties to try and speak about this violence and to try and find solutions to them. Because it's very, very worrying that as we look forward to the election, and mind you, it's only a few weeks from now, and if this violence does not stop, then the elections are going to be very, very difficult.
Well, Reverend Matale, what happened to the promises leaders of these political parties recently made to one of your church bodies, promising to urge their supporters to eschew all forms of violence? What happened to that promise?
Yes, you see, that's why we are very, very concerned that our political parties and their leadership have completely ignored the commitments that they made, and in fact, We held an endeavor with 19 political parties. And so we are very, very disappointed that the political parties, especially the major ones, have completely ignored their commitment that they made actually at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross. We want to believe that that's a sacred place. And if you commit and you vow to do something, you must do exactly that.
Reverend Matale, before I let you go, why do you think all these efforts appear not to be working and the violence keeps going on? Why is it that even with the intervention of some security agents to try to, prevent this from happening, there's accusation and counter-accusation by these political opponents complaining of orchestrated violence here and there?
You know, how I wish we knew the reasons why, then we would perhaps try to tackle that. But the one thing that we do know is that none of the political parties are willing to own, or rather to own up, that their parties are violent, or indeed that their cadres are the ones that are perpetrating this violence. Everybody's pointing to the other party as being the perpetrators. And you know that until you own a problem, until you admit the problem, you will not have the resolve to find a solution. That is what has been the problem, because each party is saying, it's not us, it's the other party. How we would want them to say, yes, let's sit together, our cadres are doing this, now let's resolve that. It appears as though, in most of our minds, as though they are using this as a way of intimidating each other, intimidating the Zambians, so that they vote one way or the other. And that is totally unacceptable in our country. We cannot allow that. In fact, only a few days ago, our Electoral Commission of Zambia did warn the politicians that if they do not stop this violence, they probably might be forced to postpone these elections. And I think for me, as an individual, I would go for that if they do not stop this violence, because we do not want to have leadership in this country that will ascend to the throne walking on the backs of dead bodies. Because even one person died, that would be one too many. We want a peaceful election. That's why all of us are working very hard towards, making sure that violence is stopped.
Suzanne Matale is the General Secretary of the Council of Churches in Zambia. She spoke with reporter Peter Cloti from the capital, Lusaka. U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama will visit Liberia next week to highlight girls' education. VOA's James Batty is in Liberia on assignment and sat down with Information Minister Eugene Nagbe and talked about the significance of Mrs. Obama's visit to Liberia.
Well, we have a very historic, long-standing relations with the U.S. The visit of the First Lady of the U.S. is an honor to Liberia. She has a very great program with girls' education and girls' empowerment. Liberia has a population of a very youthful population, so we think this visit will help in strengthening the already strong bonds that we have with the United States of America. And we are happy that she has chosen our country over several others to come and engage with Liberian young women.
As you mentioned, Mr. Minister, the First Lady is expected to highlight girls' education. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf being the first elected African woman president. What would you say is her record in terms of educating women and girls?
Well, the statistics are still not where we want it to be, because the deficit that we experienced because of the years of conflict has thrown our educational system backwards, and we have progressively been trying to increase girls' enrollment in school to increase improve the quality of education. So the education of the girl child has remained a priority of this government, and because of that, we continue to put more emphasis. We have made some progress. The ratio of girls to boys education in Liberia is 50-50 now, and we have seen an increase in the number of girls who have enrolled in school. Therefore, we think this visit will not just be symbolic, but also be a tangible one, because some of our young women who we meet with First Lady Obama, we share their stories, we share their challenges, and we give her a better perspective of the situation we have in this country.
The issue of violence against women, when the president came to power, she promised to champion that, to fight against violence against women, particularly rape. What is the record now?
The statistics on rape is still not something that is pleasing. It remains an issue of concern. The government has used a lot of conventional means, including strong legislation. We have a rape law that is very strong. Persecution has happened in several cases. But yet the problem persists, and more women and young girls are getting raped. In fact, there is a program now with our Ministry of Gender to do sensitization, to do education about rape, and to also use the community method to try to prevent rape. But yet there are still a persistence of the problem, and this is a matter of concern to the president. We have used several methods, several means, and we continue to explore, because for the president, the issue of rape is one of her priority areas.
Nigeria's government has launched a mass online recruitment drive to offer training and employment opportunities to young people. The initiative has been met with enthusiasm and a fair bit of frustration from users trying to access the site. Chika Odua reports from Abuja.
The Nigerian government is hiring. The state rolled out an online recruitment tool, NPower, this month and said it will hire 500,000 university graduates to work across the country in various sectors, mainly health, education, and agriculture. The site also advertises job training for non-graduates in areas like animation and technology. But job applicants say there is a problem. The website keeps crashing.
Well, I have been experiencing some difficulties for more than 3 days now. Whenever I try to log in, I'm facing error problem. So I even think that maybe the website is not correct.
That's 25-year-old Usman Mohammed. He has a master's degree in environmental management, and it turns out he had the right URL, npower.gov.ng. So he went back to the website and...
The problem did not change, but I'm thinking maybe today if I try again, I will be among the lucky people to access the website.
Sometimes clicking the register link brings up an error message. Other times, the register link is not available at all. Try again in a few minutes. That's the advice the NPower team is offering through its official Twitter handle. But 42% of users responded to a survey last week to say they cannot submit an application. The National Bureau of Statistics says about a fifth of Nigerians below the age of 34 are unemployed. The heavy traffic reflects the thirst for opportunity in Africa's most populous nation. But some people are still skeptical.
Yes, I'm skeptical about it. Because over all these years, there's nothing that shows that Nigeria is even ready to employ the youth.
Bullis Mungo Park lives in the northeastern city of Maiduguri. The government said 400,000 Nigerians registered on NPower in the first 36 hours, and the site has received over 35 million hits. It's a virtual stampede. Previous government recruitment schemes have led to actual stampedes. In 2014, 7 people were killed when tens of thousands of Nigerians flocked to the National Stadium in the capital of Abuja to apply for jobs at the Immigration Department. In 2008, another job recruitment exercise left 12 people dead. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Zimbabwe's deteriorating economic situation has given rise to protests around the country. In the third largest city of Mutare Thursday, hundreds of protesters of the opposition movement for Democratic Change Party, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, marched in protest against the poor state of the economy, demanding an explanation from President Robert Mugabe. Reading from a statement from Changarai, who did not attend the march due to undisclosed illness, his deputy, Thokozani Kupe, declared that there will be more freedom demonstrations until President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party address the country's crippling economy, among a host of other needs. Reporter Lodia Moyo of VOA's Zimbabwe service has this report.
The peaceful demonstration comprising of about 3,000 protesters started from Sakuva Beto through to the central business district's Mikros Park. Traffic came to a visual standstill as the demonstrators braved the nearly 5-kilometer protest march. Ms. Kupe later addressed the gathering at around lunchtime, stating that the protests would be held in some parts of the country after holding others in the capital and in Bulawayo.
Today, as Zimbabwe, we find ourselves in an extraordinary situation. Extraordinary situations require extraordinary measures. We have and we will continue to invoke Section 59 of the Zimbabwe Constitution, which guarantees our right to demonstrate against failures of Mugabe and ZANU-PF. Oh, yes.
Kupe said citizens have to be prepared to make sacrifices until there's real change that ends ZANU-PF corruption and poverty induced on people through poor governance policies.
Let us fight with the last drop of our tears. Let us fight with the last drop of our sweat. Enough is enough. Zwakwana, zwakwanele. We will continue to demonstrate until Mugabe and ZANU-PF go packing to Zimba. As the MDC, our fundamental promise to the people of Zimbabwe is a better life for all. We hereby, as the MDC, demand that they be changed.
Zimbabweans demand to know the whereabouts of $15 billion in diamond revenue from Chiatswa diamond fields that the ZANU-PF-led government cannot account for. She added that, despite the 2.2 million jobs promised by the ZANU-PF party during its election campaigns in 2013, there's been more unemployment and company closures. Mr. David Tekeshe was among the thousands of demonstrators. He says he supports the democratic path being taken of peaceful protests for regime change.
The president is democratic. He wants democratic means to remove Mugabe and his people. So we applaud him. And I think that's the way forward. We don't want war, but we want to show them democratically. As the president said.
James Mdenda, Mtare resident, says Mr. Tsvangirai's message was very clear to every Zimbabwean who needs political change that benefits every Zimbabwean.
The message was quite clear to every Zimbabwean. It is actually telling the situation on the ground. The message was talking about the closure of industry. The message was talking about the bond notes, which everybody in Zimbabwe is having questions about. The message was talking about Mugabe's promises, thousands and or millions of promises, which have never been realized. So Zimbabweans today were gathered at Mikros Park to ask Mugabe what he has promised, especially the 2 million jobs, which are not there.
Jobless university graduate Chennai Mangezi from Chipinge says the statement from the MDC leader breathed the lease of life to the dejected citizenry, particularly the youths.
It was a very powerful speech because he needed us as youth for us to be aggressive enough against the ZANU-PF government.
The MDC deputy president was accompanied in Mutare by other top party leaders, including Abednego Bebe, Obet Gutu, Porina Mpariwa, Teresa Makoni, Morgan Komichi, Giles Mtsekwa, Douglas Monzora, among other provincial chairpersons from across the country. MDC's Manicaland provincial spokesperson Trevor Sarwaka said the demonstration ended peacefully without any arrests or disturbances. Similar protests have already been made in Harare and Bulawayo. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Jackson. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Africa Senior Athletics Championships in Eteguini, South Africa. Ivory Coast's Ben Youssef Meite and Muriel Ahore clinched gold medals in 100 meters on Thursday. Meite triumphed in the men's race in a wind-assisted 9.95 seconds. Lesotho's Mosito Lohata was second ahead of South African Akani Simbine. Ahore clocked 10.99 seconds to win the women's 100 meters. South African Karina Horn, then Marie-Jose Talou, followed her across the finish line. Sheila Chepkirui led Margaret Chelimo in a 1-2 Kenyan win in women's 5,000 meters with Ethiopian Dera Diba placed third. South African Claudia Hiounis won women's 100-meter hurdles in 13.36 seconds. Burkina Faso's Martha Koala was second ahead of South African Marike Brits. On the infield, Victor Hogan threw 61.68 meters to lead Russell Tucker in a 1-2 South African men's discus triumph with Nigerian Stephen Mosey placed third. Similarly, South Africa's Raswal Samai leaped to a wind-assisted distance of 8.40 meters to lead Luvo Manyonga in a 1-2 South African win in men's long jump. Botswana's Riru Ramaphosa was placed third. South Africa's Frederick Pretorius won the decathlon, having amassed 7,780 points, with Ghana's Atsu Nyamadi placed second ahead of South African Willem Kutsen. Meanwhile, Serena Balti retained her title with a clearance of 4 meters to lead Dora Mahfoud in a 1-2 Tunisian women's pole vault triumph. Morocco's Nisrin Dinar was placed third. Turning to football, hosts Namibia play Zambia in the plate final at the Council of Southern Africa Football Association's COSAFA Cup in Windhoek today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Swaziland play guest side the Democratic Republic of Congo in the bronze medal playoff before South Africa face Botswana in the final. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in the city of Eteguini in South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark, and have a good day. And that's it for this June 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, as well as sports editor Marco Woomer, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year-old prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.